Hello and welcome to News Roast, three courses of conversation. I'm Jolyon Rubinstein.
My name's Hayden Prowse.
And this is a podcast
where we chew over the week's issues or the year's issues or the month. We chew over issues.
It's evergreen, mate.
People bring their beef. We have different guests that bring their beef and we chew over it.
It can be beef, vegetables. Don't be put off.
You can bring your veg.
You know, maybe you're just somebody who lives on, you know, foraging nuts in the forest. It's still for you.
Yep. Exactly. You know. If you like to chew on nuts, that's fine. You can listen to the podcast too.
Metaphorical nuts.
Metaphorical nuts.
Not in a kind of weird sexist way, I should add.
Oh,
this
right.
Juncture.
I pictured you chewing on our guest's nuts.
Wow.
Today.
I mean, wow.
Who is that, Ramesh Ranganathan?
Yeah. Well, Ramesh, welcome to the podcast.
You painted yourselves in quite the corner there, didn't you?
So
it's nice to watch.
Can't get out of my head.
Yeah. Just two men struggling to get out of a situation they've created completely themselves.
Yeah.
I pictured you having Jolyon in a vice-like grip between your thighs.
It would be vice-like.
I just
maybe
think
squeezing to give him a signal when he was doing the right thing.
So just quickly, before we go into our wonderful interview with our fantastic guest who we'll properly introduce in a minute, what is this podcast, Hayden? If people haven't heard it before or, you know, they haven't subscribed yet, why should they subscribe? What is the podcast about?
Well, this podcast, I guess, we're taking some inspiration from the American roasts. We're going to roast some issues, you know, big issues that are affecting the world in a sort of humorous way. That's why we bring actual comedians on, to kind of inject some humor into the conversation.
Yeah, well,
because otherwise
dullards like us.
Exactly.
But that's fun, and I think what we're trying to do is give our listeners the sort of ammo to sort of, if you know, you're visiting your girlfriend's parents for the first time, want to make a good impression, hopefully have a couple of interesting eloquent tidbits to sort of give them, or if you're on a first date, you know, before you go into the cinema while the trailers are on, you can still kind of have a whispery kind of conversation. Can you see any other use for it?
Yeah, I mean, take these opinions and take these jokes and use them as your own, and pretend you're as intelligent as us.
That's basically what most comedians do anyways, nick other people's
jokes.
That's
true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then just try and make them look.
That's why I go to Edinburgh. Yeah.
So every week we're going to have a guest. Now, I am absolutely over the moon to be joined today by, I'd say, and not bigging him up too much, but quite possibly Britain's number one stand-up currently.
Yeah. Certainly of Sri Lankan origin.
Yeah. Probably the comedians whose mum is probably more famous than him. That's probably the only comedian currently with a mum more famous, which isn't a sore spot for you at all, is it, Rob?
No, I wouldn't say it's
totally
a sore spot. Something I'm going to try and end.
I heard you on your podcast with Chabuds talking about when your mum and you were on Loose Women.
Yeah.
That sounds like quite an experience.
Well, they liked her a lot more than they liked me. So it's a difficult situation when you sort of think she's the tag-along, and then you become aware that you are the garnish to the Shanti main course.
I was actually in the audience. I watched his gig.
Not Loose Women, you
mean? Apollo. No, I wasn't. And it was, no, genuinely, I'm not just saying this, it was one of the best stand-up gigs I've ever been to.
Cheers,
jokes,
man.
About your kids are brutal, but literally
made me cry.
Made me cry, and we'll talk about that later. But at the end of his show, Rom came on and he's like, and now my mum's coming out, and the whole audience is like, yeah, mate! And it's like, fuck you! Is that just something that you pull out every week, or is it like...
It's just something, if I just want the audience to sort of be disappointed at the end. You know, it's like some comedians, they want like a big finish and then they sort of ride a crest. I want them to go out on a bit of a downer. So they've had an all right time, and then you just sort of shit in their cornflakes just before they leave. And then that's the abiding memory.
So how did, like, because I think people would probably like to know, how did like Asian Provocateur come about?
Well, we had had... I had happened to be doing a bit of stand-up about the fact that my mum had become annoyed about my sort of lack of... understand or lack of knowledge about my culture or our culture or whatever,
and whatever.
Yeah, and
I can't see why. He's totally respectful.
And you sound really enthusiastic.
Yeah, and what had sort of brought it to a head was the fact that I've got kids and I'm married to a white woman, which my mum has sort of accepted now. But the whole thing is that she was worried that our kids would not have any understanding of their heritage because I'm not passing anything on, you know. So that sort of brought it to a head. So I've been doing a bit of stand-up about that and talking about it, and that's where it came from. The idea was, go to Sri Lanka sort of almost like on a crash course, sort of get in touch with my culture. And it felt like it felt like something that would resonate, you know, with people in this country. But at the same time, I was a little bit worried about it because, you know, I've got friends from, you know, of Sri Lankan origin, of Indian origin, of Pakistan origin. And as far as I'm aware, I am the worst of them in terms of my lack of knowledge and understanding. So you always sort of think, even though I'm going to do this and it's something that resonates, at the same time, I'm putting myself out there as a real proper fucking Chief Bellend when it comes to, do you know what I mean, understanding. Because there's always that worry.
I loved it. But first of all, it was really huge, wasn't it? Like, did you expect it to be as big?
No, we definitely didn't expect it.
It's quite a niche thing to go that big, wasn't
it?
It's not like,
yeah, well, you know, I remember Ben Green, who you both know very well, Ben Green, the director, and I were sitting after we'd finished the last episode, and we were just talking about how we were sort of proud of what we'd done, and it was a shame that it might not go as big as we'd like, because just that's the nature of how
it's
things
good
are.
Stuff,
yeah,
really
yeah, and so for it to get the response it did was like amazing, man. You know, I didn't expect it at all.
Because you were saying before we started recording, because I thought, you know, your sort of general misanthropy in the series, but, you know, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, was kind of like partly put on. But you were saying that it was actually that and worse.
I had to tell me to rein it in a bit, because like, you know, it's like you got to chill out a bit here, man. But the thing was, I'd never done anything like it, so, and we just sort of thought, let's just be honest as possible about everything. And so if there was something, you know, for example, in the first episode, like they I was supposed to do a blessing and it turned out there's some
genius,
sort of miscommunication.
One of my favorite bits of TV.
Yeah, and it was an exorcism, right? So I was sort of sat in this they put me in this sort of bamboo cage, and then this guy started like waving this sword around my head, and then and when he put a chicken on my head, like he started rubbing my head with a chicken.
Did you actually not know?
I didn't know, mate.
Legit,
I didn't know any
like,
of that
just
was
being honest.
Mate,
like,
I didn't know. I promise you, I didn't know any of that was going to happen.
TV promise or real promise?
No, real, genuine promise, mate.
Because I saw that and I was like, fuck me. If he doesn't know that, it's coming.
Listen,
that would freak me out.
No, but dude, this is the thing, right? So I'm sitting in the cage, they're doing this shit. Like, I'm looking at Ben, he's fucking having the time of his life.
He loves
thinking
it,
this is great.
He?
And then when they brought out the sword and the chicken. He like shrugged his shoulders like, even I didn't know this was going to happen, right? But the problem is I wasn't allowed to leave the cage because they said to me, if you leave the cage, you're going to piss off the whole village.
Yeah.
But there's a point at which I think there's an equation where if there was enough sword and enough chicken, the village's rage wouldn't have been enough for me to not leave the cage. You know, like,
yeah, plan one, piss off small rural community in Sri Lanka. Yeah. Probably not many escape routes out there.
Yeah, that's true.
Or just, you know, pay homage to your Sri Lankan heritage.
That,
no,
yeah.
I mean,
one where you wrestled that small kid.
Oh,
well.
My God.
Yeah.
Basically, he beat your ass.
Well,
that must have been a low point.
What I said to them was that is a lose-lose situation because either I get my ass kicked or I beat the shit out of a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like, no, I'm never coming out of that looking good. Do you know what I mean? So,
no,
actually, that was probably the best of the two things that could have happened.
Although, I mean, when it went to America, it looked like you're having so much more fun.
Yeah.
But then, sort of knowing you a little bit better at that point, then watching you naked with a naked girl on Naked News, was absolutely, I mean, I could see that you were clearly incredibly comfortable in, well, I watched it on BBC One because it was on BBC One and BBC Three.
Yeah, it was, yeah, they put it on after.
But it was an American show, didn't
they? Oh,
right, show,
that show,
that's
what I was going to ask.
Yeah, that's
that's what I mean, when you were naked on.
Yeah, that was, it's Canadian, that Naked News.
Is it actually?
Yeah. But I said to them that I had two issues with it. One, that I had to be naked. Obviously, that's a big issue.
Mate, I think you'd love to be naked.
No. I mean, on my own, yes, I love it. But, like, not so
it's
anyone can
hobbies.
See. Yeah, yeah.
But I can count four times at least in Asian Proctor being naked. So
yeah,
I know. You have a massive aversion to it.
No, I do have an aversion to it, mate.
Are you just a secret naturist?
No, I'm not. Actually, speaking of, my mum, right, once, she works at Royal Mail, right?
Right.
And she said to me once, somebody at my work has said there's like some social club, right, that he was like talking about me joining, right? And she goes, do you mind coming with me? So I said, all right. So she goes, I'm just a bit like, so I went, all right, fine. So she comes to pick me up. I go with her, right? We walk up this driveway. There's a guy fixing his car. butt naked, right?
Just amazing.
Like completely amazing. Naked, right? Amazing. Lent over, so it's full crack, like honestly, everything.
Crack out.
Walk into the thing. Yeah. This guy's inviting my mum to join this naturist club, right?
Shut up.
So we're wandering around. First of all, she didn't tell me that. She knew, right? So she knew that was going to be... And also, knowing that, why take your son? Like,
so she knew, your mum knew.
What, how is this possibly an all right scenario? So I'm walking through, right?
Mate.
Right, my dad was still around. I don't know why she took me instead of my dad, right? And then, so we walk around, everyone's butt naked, fine, I get the idea. you know very quickly what's involved. You think, okay, I get it. They show me another room, I go, will everyone be naked? I think I've got the idea, unless there are outfits. I get it, everyone's naked wherever we go.
They always look at you, because I've been to loads of like nudist beaches and stuff.
Have you?
My family used to do that, we were all into that. Well, it's right, very odd. Nice. Anyway, and everyone looks at you, it's like a sort of thing in their eyes with their... questioning. It's like, this isn't about me being naked.
It's just
so like heavy with that with that look. You have to completely disregard the fact that someone's penis is
The worst thing about it is at the end they sort of talked to mum about joining and then sort of spoke to me about how a single man wouldn't really be allowed to join, and they thought it was a bit weird that I'd gone along. And I was like, fucking my mum brought me, dude.
I don't even want to be here.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be a weird conversation to have, like, mate, you're not supposed to be here.
No,
my
mum
brought me here.
Yeah.
No, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it a lot worse.
You're lying about your mum bringing you to a secret nature, is it?
In relation to you being naked a lot and going into situations like that on TV, do you ever feel... Because I know I do, and I think Jolyon probably does as well, slightly manipulated by directors.
Yeah, I think that it's difficult because, like, you...
Not in a bad way.
Yeah, no. But they'll ask you to do, you know, they'll say this is what's going to happen, or you're doing something, or something's a surprise.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly questioning whether I'm happy with it. You know, whether I'm happy with this and whether I'm happy with it to go out, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is, when you're doing something like Asian Provocateur, you're knackered, right? You're really tired.
Yeah.
And so in my head, I'm thinking, if I'm not happy with this, is that a legitimate concern? Or is this just because I'm so tired, I'm just becoming like this sort of...
A bit sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, it's a really hard one.
It's like that thing when you're a kid and, you know, there's another kid who's perhaps a bit cooler who's like, oh yeah, go over there and do that. Yeah, go over there and do that. That'd be really cool. Yeah, go. And then you go and do it. And then everyone goes, ha! And everyone laughs and you've made a titty of yourself. That's basically what... being on TV is.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm feeling a bit peckish, so I'd like to move on to the starter. So we're going to have a free course meal. Do you enjoy a free course meal, Ron? Your kind of jam?
Well, I do, but it's very difficult. Actually, this relates to my starter suggestion.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Because my starter suggestion is, can veganism save the world?
Right. Oh, nice.
And desserts for vegans is very, it's very tricky, man. Well, because most, actually, desserts is the problem. Starters are not a problem at all, actually.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The main course for a vegan is always the best, right? Not the best of anyone.
Why is that?
Because they actually put an effort into the main course, whereas a starter is always,
like
it's like
and hummus.
Melon balls or like, do you know what I mean? Or like, and then you have to check that they haven't used goose fat to scoop the melon out. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like...
How long have you been vegan for?
For about 4 years. I was vegetarian from like a kid and then...
How you were raised then, was it? You were
vegetarian? No. I read something about... vegetarian diet, and then came home and told my mum I never wanted to eat meat again.
No way.
So like, yeah, so like my family are proper.
Is it like a health thing, or is it a
It was an ethical thing. Right. I'd read this thing, and I thought I don't want to eat meat anymore.
What was the thing you read?
It was this like, it was just this book about the about farming and like, you know, factory farming and just how animals are treated and shit like that. And I just thought I was a big meat eater then, you know, I really loved it. And my mum's a great cook, so it was, you know, I did love meat, but I just, after I read it, I thought, I don't want to eat this anymore. So I came home and told my mum that. And then as I sort of read more about it sort of relatively recently, I realised that the reasons that I'd become vegetarian were slightly undermined by the fact that I was still eating dairy and eggs and stuff like that. So I thought, if I really am going to make, you know, if I'm going to take my own little stand on this, then I have to cut all that out as well.
You get to be quite smug. If you're a vegan, you're allowed to be quite smug because you have your footprint on the earth is quite minimal. Well, could probably take some international flights now without any feeling.
Yeah, and
guilt.
I also think sometimes if I wanted to, I could twat a pigeon and it'd probably be all right. Well. Because I've done, you know, I've done so much positive.
You saved enough to.
Think I'm still up positive on the balance. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
What always worries me about the idea of being vegan is, you know, when you're like a bit hungover.
Yeah.
And you have like the sort of thirst that can never be quenched.
Yeah.
And like that kind of greasy hunger.
Yeah.
Do you not like occasionally just get a little like,
I know, listen, man, I've fallen off the wagon, you know, in my early days. Do you know what I mean? Like with the hangover, that really is a thing that can get you. Because the truth is, veganism, for all of the industry it's devoted towards creating nice vegan food, they've not mastered melting cheese.
Man.
You know, that is like is like the holy grail for vegan products, and they just haven't nailed it. And so,
what have they mastered meat then?
Well, yeah, sort
of like tofu. No.
Well, you like sausages, they've nailed.
Yeah,
bacon, they can. Well, corn isn't vegan actually.
Oh,
so corn has got egg in it, but they have just brought out It's so shit. I'm so glad you brought up fucking corn, right? Because it really pisses me off. Because like they've got all these amazing vegetarian products, right? And they go, this is wicked.
Yeah.
And that none of it was vegan, right? So then eventually they said, we're bringing out vegan stuff. So, and they've got two things. One is like a fillet, like a corn fillet. And the other one is like just diced chicken, fake chicken bits. It looks like an experiment, right?
So
I'm going into the vegetarian section and then fucking restricted within that fridge. There's like you know, in every supermarket, there's a fridge for like sort of losers or whatever. So there's all these other people that have got all those cabinets. And then there's one twat, which is me, looking at peering into this cabinet for the two products from within that cabinet that I'm allowed to eat.
It kind of annoys me. I think I would be vegetarian if there were better options. Because
you
go to places and like, you know, you're having a roast with everyone and they're like, you know, do you want the veggie option? And like, yeah, I'll have the veggie option. They bring you out some mushrooms.
I know.
And just, it's just shit.
Yeah. And then what's annoying about that is if you were at a dinner party or something like that, and then somebody brings out the vegetarian option and you're eating it, and somebody looks at it and goes, oh, that's better than what we're having, is it? Because I'll swap you if you want.
Because
I don't think you do want the mushrooms on toast instead of your steak, you prick.
So the question is, Ramesh, you know, can veganism save the world?
Well, I've got mixed feelings about it, to be honest with you. First of all, I'm fully aware that sort of veganism is a very much a first world privilege. I mean, to decide that you are going to reject most of the food that is presented to you is a pretty privileged position to be in.
Yeah.
The other thing is like, you know, the assumption that vegan products are ethical or are okay is a grey area. You know, like there's this company, I think it's Amy's Foods, right? And I went into Holland and Barrett's when I first went vegan, and they've got like pretty much a vegan equivalent for everything, you know, like mac and cheese, like chicken kievs and all that. They've got all the vegan sort of equivalents and they all taste great. And I remember like when I first sort of started, because when I first went vegan, I was buying everything, man, like trying everything. I wanted to see what my go-to stuff was going to be. So I bought everything and I was eating it all. And Amy's, all of that stuff was great. And then I went and looked, and they've got like a page on Facebook, and I looked on Facebook and everything on there was just about how they're using palm oil in all their products and how unacceptable that is.
Cutting
and like the number of
Indonesian
orangutans that have fucking copped it as a result of this. Do you know what I mean?
So it's to explain that, probably like, you know, for the audience, like cutting down loads of Indonesian rainforest to plant palm.
Wasn't your sister who was telling us age years ago about like how you could run a car
off
palm oil?
Yeah, my sister used to run her car off veggie fat.
Yeah,
from
veggie
chip
fat.
Shops.
And I was like, wow, well, that's really good because that means you can't take the oil out of the ground, which is obviously good for, you know, sort of CO2 emissions. So that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah.
And then I sort of read about the deforestation. I don't know if anyone saw that video. It's a horrendous video of like sort of native people in the forest of Indonesia sort of like being pushed out. Mm. I just get so confused, like what to, because like you're saying, it's almost like you sort of feel that now, with marketing being so sophisticated, they're like, oh, people are into like green stuff now. They're clever, aren't they? They're marketing it.
Well, I think that, you know, they know, obviously the trend now is like organic this and blah, 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 and green everything. But the other thing is like, you know, you sort of think, because when you talk to vegans that were vegan like 20 years ago, I mean, those guys are
original
hardcore,
vegan,
like they were having dry Weetabix like three times a day, right? So like, you know,
some
those guys, they're proper, I mean, they deserve respect. Like they were like the fucking architects.
They're
right?
Just a soft,
they're like Africa Bambaataa of veganism,
vegan.
Like these guys. So then you think, well, it's better now because there's more vegan products. But actually, you know, if you've got mass produced vegan products or whatever, actually the ethics of that are pretty cagey. You know, if you, you know, look at packaging, you look at how these things are manufactured, you know, how these things are sourced or whatever, what had to give way, you know, in the same way as Palmer, what had to give way for them to grow the stuff that, there's all these things that you don't know about. And it's even like with things like trainers, because like, I love trainers.
That's what I was going to say. Then, what have you got?
Well, this is the thing. So I looked into, I've spent a lot of time looking into.
So you don't even wear anything that's.
I try not to. I didn't throw stuff out that wasn't. Yeah, but
it's actually really admirable.
I love these moments where Hayden gets the middle class guilt heart.
No, I'm. Just, no, I, just, he's I getting, actually he's really like, admire that. I just. But what so, I kind of wish I could do it.
I know he's. He, but no, what but he's actually also saying is, look at the self hatred.
Yeah, that's
what it is. I can't stick to my morals because I love my Reebok classics, man. Yeah.
No, but the thing is, though, is
are you like, busting classics right now?
Like it, Max.
All right. Sorry.
So the thing is, you sort of look into it, and like a lot of even the big companies have stopped using sort of leather and stuff in their shoes. But you look at something like Converse. So Converse, they've got loads of shoes that don't have. I mean, there's animal products in the glue and stuff like that. It's almost unavoidable.
Can't avoid that.
But we look at someone like Converse. You know, Converse, they've not got leather in the shoes. But then when you look into how Converse are made, I suddenly started finding out all of these things about unethical practices of like pay to labour forces and child labour and all that shit. And then you think, do I care more about a cow or a kid? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's all this shit that you have to sort of. Like,
way
consider,
up.
Do you know what I mean? And then you almost start thinking, I wish actually I hadn't read about this.
Yeah.
Because then I'd be eating a
ignorance
chicken and bacon sandwich.
Do you know what I mean? Down
the back of a child and not give a fuck.
My theory is, right, if everybody who ate meat was forced to actually kill the cow that they ate, that would be a really good thing. If you every restaurant, right, you have a little video screen with a picture of a cow and a guy holding a gun, right, to the cow's head, and you have to push a little red button. And when you push the little red button, the guy goes, and he shoots the cow in the head.
Is that real? That's
it's
is
a real
that,
thing.
That's real footage.
It would have to be real. People would have to believe that it was real, that they were shooting. It was them pushing the button that shot the cow. Or they could just go out the back of the restaurant with a, you know,
a handgun.
And have to just kill the cow. And then you can enjoy your meat, but like at least take responsibility for killing the cow. If
we
can't do it, you can't have the T-bone.
We had actually had endless conversations about this because we were thinking about actually trying to do it as a social experiment and we just couldn't really work out and you kind of get a quorum of opinion.
But I did it. Do you know why I did it?
What do you mean? I killed a cow?
No, I killed a sheep.
Oh no, that's why we had the conversation.
I went,
you were traumatised.
Because I've been trying to go veggie for years. Right? Yeah. I really think ethically I should go veggie.
Yeah.
But I found it very hard, mostly because of the hangovers. And I was in Australia, half my family Australian and farmers and stuff, they're all quite like, you know, proper like redneck Australians. And there was a sheep that had like ripped open its udder. Oof. And the farmer was like, you know, I'm gonna have to put the sheep down. Mm-hmm. Like someone's gonna have to kill the sheep. So I was like, oh, I'll kill the sheep. I like volunteered to kill the sheep because I thought if I kill the sheep, then I've sort of like in some way I've kind of like owned it and I can eat meat without too much.
You've at least engaged with the process.
I've engaged with what happens when something dies for me to feed myself.
Yeah.
And it was like really horrific. Like I was given this really small gun, this 22 gun, and I shot the sheep in the head like 24 times.
Wow, I didn't realise that.
Shot it in the head 24 times. It was like struggling and wriggling on the
floor.
Oh,
so it was still alive. I didn't think.
Well, no,
you
this
didn't
is the
sort
thing.
Of shoot it and you killed it and you thought, fuck you, and just keep going. Scarface. You've got a blood loss.
That's what it looked like. I was just unloading into its head. Yeah. But the farmer was like, Hayden, mate, the sheep's dead, mate. And I was like, it doesn't look like it's dead. It's like wriggling. Like, this is just what happens, mate. It's nerve endings, mate. So like,
oh, that is
wrong. But then I thought to myself, like, when anything dies, right? Like, what is life? It's just nerve endings.
What is life?
Him saying, like, just nerve endings, mate. That's just what... The sheep is blatantly still kind of alive.
Yeah.
And
oh,
it's just like...
Have you seen those, like, seafood? You know, the Japanese squid... You know, have you seen these little dishes where they have a little squid in a bowl?
No.
Yeah. And then they add, like, because of the nerve endings, right? You put, like, a soy sauce on it.
Yeah.
And the nerve endings react and the thing, like, wriggles.
That's sick.
That is disgusting.
It's like a delicacy, yeah.
That's like my, like, nightmare. Just back to the veganism thing quickly. Yeah. I mean, I was doing a bit of research just before we came on, and I was actually quite staggered by some of the research that's happened. So the UN basically were talking about how if we just chose to eat less meat, that or if you actually just eradicated meat use altogether, that would basically be sort of about 14.5% of all carbon emissions, which doesn't sound like a lot until you realise that that's almost exactly the same figure as all the CO2 emissions of every car, every plane, every train, and every major sort of cruise line or boat in the entire world And that just blew my mind.
That's mental.
That just blew my mind. Because, I mean, when you think about it, like for me anyway, when I think about global warming, it gets me so down and I feel so powerless because it's like, well, everyone's going to keep using their car.
Yeah.
No one's going to start extracting oil. So I feel really down about it. But then just actually reading that statistic that that is the same. Like if everyone just were like, right,
but
I'm not going to do that.
Do you know
and
what,
also, just to finish this, because what I also was surprised about, which I didn't know, was that, you know, like beef, for instance, that is like 8 times as bad for the environment eating beef as it is eating chicken.
As a chicken, yeah.
Because basically it takes longer for, you know, I guess the meat to sort of mature and whatever.
No, no, it's to do with the space of land that it takes to rear.
Yeah, the amount of water and the resources and all
because
that
you,
kind of stuff.
To rear one cow, you need like 4 square miles of land to feed it.
God, that's the amount crazy, of grass isn't it? It's
that's
crazy.
Why we should all be eating dogs and cats. Because there's very little space needed to rear a small cat.
But the thing is, though, you do raise an interesting point because this sort of idea, this Western idea of the hierarchy of what animals are acceptable to eat and what animals aren't, and people are seen as savages because they eat dogs, like, they just happen to have chosen a different animal to eat. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's this sort of
like
cultural
dogs.
Thing.
You know,
I love
like
dogs,
this?
Mate.
You know when dogs bark at you, like they really shout at you, like, really aggressively? Do you ever get the feeling like you think to yourself, sorry, do you not know who I am?
Yeah.
Do you not realise what my species has done compared to what your species has done? Why are you shouting at me?
Yeah. It's this hierarchy immediately you're establishing.
Yeah. It's
like you above the dog.
Incredible disrespect. When did a cow ever do that to you? When did a cow ever just like scream at you?
Yeah.
You know?
Or that's what I think. If I wish wasps were delicious.
Yeah.
Because... I hate them so much, man. Like, I hate them. Yeah. Like, I really...
No, what the consequences.
Shitting hell, I hate them. For example, the thing with, like, Cecil the Lion.
Yeah.
You know, like, when people, like, kicked off about that lion being killed, you sort of think, well, you are getting annoyed about it while you're eating a hamburger. I mean, I sort of get it.
Huge hypocrisy.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I get it that there's fewer of them, and I understand all of that, but at the same time... Is animals an animal? Do you know what I mean? It's the same thing with like when people got pissed off over SeaWorld, you know, with Tillicum, R.I.P. But with all that whole SeaWorld thing, you know, people getting up in arms about it. But at the same time, you're consuming meat. I sort of think like, and then the same thing with this Yulin Dog Festival. You know, that everyone's sort of up in arms about it. And then when you look into it, because I remember when I first sort of started seeing people talking about it, I was like, well, hold on a minute. They've just decided to eat, you know, they're eating dogs. I mean, don't get me wrong, I realise that we find that abhorrent culturally, but is that any worse than us having a beef festival? Do you know what I mean? Then you look into it and you go, yeah, but they treat them really bad. And you go, okay, well, that's a separate issue, but let's not pretend that all cows have an absolutely incredible existence before they get slaughtered in this country. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I just think, and I'm not saying I'm speaking from a position of relative ignorance, but I do think those arguments are sort of, it's not black and white. Do you know what I mean? And
what about dolphin?
Dolphin,
you eat a bit of dolphin? Bit of flipper?
I just think that dolphins have got an incredible sort of PR company or something because I don't actually believe they are as nice as we've been led to believe.
Do you think they're wankers?
In the same way that Jaws fucked over sharks, I think Flipper has given dolphins a better reputation than they merit.
Ramesh, did you bring a main course? Or?
Yes, my main course is, does Obama get an easy time from the left because he's quite cool?
Oh,
that is my main course.
Controversial.
Yes, totally right.
So
now.
I can't believe have you got any problems with Obama?
I don't.
He's the first black president,
my boy.
Well, arguably, Bill Clinton was the first black president. what I would say is, I think that
we might have a bomb drop there.
Yeah,
like Westwood.
I think the thing with Obama is that he's done a lot of great things and, you know, and all of these things are debatable. I mean, what he's done for healthcare, I'd say, is a positive thing. You know, the way that he is great, is a positive thing. The way that him and his family have conducted themselves throughout the 2 terms is great.
But I'm not
against Obama at
sounds
all.
Sounds like he might have some big problem.
I'm not against Obama. What I do think is, I think that people do not apply enough scrutiny to what he has done during his tenure, and I think there are negatives. You know,
such as
the number of people that have died. You know, number of innocent people that have died as a result of drone strikes under his administration is incredible. Like the number of innocent civilians that have died as a result.
More or less than died in Bush's invasion.
Well, in the last year,
actually a lot more.
In the last year, 2016, 26,000 people were killed like from bombing. Oh, no, sorry, that's not true.
26,000
bombs were dropped. Sorry.
Right.
And when Obama was asked about it, because obviously as he's coming to the end of his administration, they ask about it, and he said that people, he became aware during his tenure that people that they were becoming more relaxed about how easy drone strikes were to sort of implement, because the technology sort of developed pretty quickly while he was in power, while he's been in power. And to be fair to him, they did change it and it did get better.
Yeah.
But certainly during the early part of his presidency, it was insane. The other thing you could argue about Obama's time is he's properly like left the Democrats like in the shit. I mean, they're less popular than they've been like ever. Do you know what I mean?
Can I take some devil's advocate with you for a second? Have you read Jeremy Scahill's book Dirty Wars?
No.
Which is all about, you know, drone bombings. It's not even just drone bombings. There's like Scud missiles being fired from submarines off the coast of Yemen, which blow up entire schools. It's kind of fucked up. But people always look for someone to blame, and obviously Obama's the figurehead, but I don't think this is the kind of thing that he's got much control of. He's got an entire military-industrial complex that are there to advise him on security threats to the US. He is sworn to protect the best interests of the US at all times. If someone comes to him who's got information that he's not privy to and says, look, dude, you know, I've been in the CIA for years, and I know what's going on, and this is happening, we've got agents in the field that are telling us this person's planning attack on the US, how would you say no to a quote-unquote precision military strike that could protect the country that you're supposed to serve? How could you in good conscience say, sorry, yeah, I don't think you should do that?
I don't. The answer is I don't know. Mm. But my argument is, one, it's not my job to know. But secondly, I don't mind if he goes and does that. But at least let's apply some scrutiny and explore that, because I think he's given a pass on it. Mm. You know, that's my problem. My problem is not that it happened. And I'm not... There's no way... I think he does he's doing an incredibly difficult job, and certainly beyond my, you know, way beyond anything I could ever imagine doing.
I don't know, Rom. I reckon he'd be quite good.
Thanks, mate. But at the same time, I just don't think that he's being held accountable by the left.
I'm totally with Rom on this. Like, I think that it's a very weird situation we find ourselves in, because obviously, like, when you put him up against, like, you know, orange faced Donald, there's no comparison there. Like, I much prefer to have Obama than to have, you know, like Trump. But, like, you know, I'm sort of with you, you know, particularly in the last couple of weeks, everyone's on Facebook like, oh my God, he's this, he's that, he's incredible, we're going to miss him. And I was like, well, actually, I think he was a bit disappointing. You know, you think about the wave of optimism that came with the sort of, you know, obviously the incredibly important historical moment of the first black presidency, massively powerful image seeing those two little girls in the White House, huge amounts done in terms of,
yes, I can, you know, yes, moving, we can,
yes, we can, you know, all that stuff, all that optimism. But actually, you know, you could actually see it as a bit of a precursor to Trump. You know, because a lot of people, something I found really staggering on a lot of the interviews was people who were banging to Bernie Sanders, and then Hillary kind of obviously took, you know, allegedly some people say that, you know, the Democratic convention was rigged and that she didn't make it. But they crossed over to Trump. They went from change and Obama and really being into it and voting for him twice to being like, oh no, let's make America great again.
Yeah.
Is that not his fault? Is that not Obama's fault?
I think it started before Obama. I think I agree with you, but I think the left, people on the left are ideologues, right? They want things to be perfect. They believe in this kind of like, you know, this kind of like utopia that they can live in where no one's going to be, you know, sort of caught up in a war. There's going to be no wars and everyone's going to be equal and all that kind of stuff. But you kind of have to be aware that it is a grey area being in power. And he was put in a kind of catch-22 situation really from the beginning of his presidency.
Yeah, I mean, inherited an economic disaster.
He had to get the US out of. Inherited a war, two wars in the Middle East that he had to get the US out of. It's a massive job. And plus, he couldn't do anything for his second term at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was all presidential decrees. That was the only thing he could do. I think it started from before Obama. We were talking... After me and Joel, actually, and Teo, who's our producer, were talking about Trump's election just after it happened. And there was a great piece in The Atlantic about how this Trump's election and the failure of the Democratic Party goes back to way before Obama. It goes back to Clinton. It goes back to the Democrats that came into power after Nixon, right? The people who were really disillusioned with, the, you know, Kennedy and Lyndon B. Johnson, who took the nation into a really disastrous war in Vietnam that killed, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of American soldiers, I don't know. You know, untold Vietnamese. It was absolute economic disaster. It was absolute military disaster. And they turned the Democratic, they kind of annexed all the old school Democrats from the Democratic Party. These were guys that had supported the war in Vietnam. A lot of them were kind of like slightly racist. They were real old school dudes, a lot of them from the Deep South. But the one thing they did do was they held companies to account. They broke up monopolies, they broke up banks, they made sure they redistributed wealth, right? When all those old Democratic guys were sort of purged from the party, the new guys took control, like the Clinton gang, and they were all about a new form of liberalism, which was about, you know, gay rights, it was about women's rights, it was about anti-racist policies, you know, and they filled their administration with women and gays and different coloured people to represent the different sort of people that made up American society, and they forgot about what the Democratic Party used to be about, which was breaking up the monopolies, breaking up, you know, taking money from the rich essentially and giving it to the poor. And that's why the white working class of America flocked to Trump.
Well, I think, you know, what you say is, you know, it's sort of borne out by the fact that, you know, a sort of an inherited billionaire, a white inherited billionaire, taking the presidency from a black family, that is seen as the underdog sticking it to the man or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like an incredible sort of turnaround of perception and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that Obama was a bad president. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is I think that we don't question him enough because of the fact that he's such a charismatic speaker, because he does some pretty cool stuff. You know, he's, you know, when he has his presidential dinners or whatever, they're hilarious, and he has
he's a stand-up.
Yeah, it's like,
sang,
you know,
that amazing grace, didn't he? That
he does things that you've not seen a president do, you know, to that
read
degree.
That mean tweets on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah, all of that stuff. I think that all sort of adds to him as somebody that you sort of accept all of the negatives as well without sort of questioning maybe as much as you should do. And also, I do think he slightly benefits from the fact that he is being succeeded by the man that will trigger the apocalypse. So I think that sort of works in his favour in terms of...
But don't you think, Rom, don't you think? I mean, do you remember the White House dinner where he absolutely cussed Trump?
Yeah.
This was like... four or five years ago now, just basically being like, have you got to get back to The Apprentice?
Yeah.
And like now looking at Trump, think how much he must have been fuming on that.
Yeah.
Like, do you not think he kind of almost trolled him into it?
Yeah.
Trolled Trump into it.
Well, I mean, you know, if you see the footage.
There's that thing, isn't there, where Trump's just sitting there and his head looks like it's about to explode or whatever, and Obama's like just.
I don't think I quite clocked at the time just how mad Trump was, though. I mean, like, just sort of like, sort of following on from what you're saying, like, because I'm self-confessed like Obama fan. I think he's done a lot of great stuff.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone sitting here is going, no, we don't like Obama, because we do. We like, but I like the idea of Obama more. I'm doing some research into this topic just before I came out with this really quite staggering. There was an article in the Guardian by a guy called Meda Benjamin about exactly what you're talking about, that America dropped 26,171 bombs in 2016. Which, bloody hell! I mean, that's over 76 bombs a day. Right. And on to the point you were saying about, yes, he absolutely did inherit those wars. But as it says in the article, and I quote, President Obama did reduce the number of US soldiers fighting Afghanistan and Iraq, but he dramatically expanded the air wars and the use of special operations forces around the globe. And in 2016, US special operations could be found in 70% of the world's nations, 138 countries, a staggering jump of 130% since the days of the Bush administration.
How many people died?
I don't know.
As a result of American military.
Well, he was saying in the article again, it says, you know, there were airstrikes in Syria and Iraq. I think everyone's aware of those. But bombs rained down people off Afghanistan, Libya, Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan. That's seven majority Muslim countries. And it's like, the thing that I find hard is, and I think, look, we've all worked in America, right? Isn't it weird when you're there, when Fox News is basically just the BBC? And I'm not talking about like New York and LA here. Like, I don't think you've been to America unless you've been to somewhere like Arkansas or Phoenix or like, you know, like Montana, like somewhere that's not the standard jam, you know, or Texas. And you walk around and you realise that actually... they've got literally no idea what's going on in the next state.
Let alone, if you
ask people where Yemen is.
Well, that's what someone's, like, you know, we just had the other day, you had Meryl Streep saying all this stuff about Trump, and Trump saying she was an overrated actress. Yeah. All we got was Meryl Streep's amazing speech about Trump, Trump with his petty, thin-skinned response. Someone who lives in Omaha, I think, or their sister lives in Omaha, was telling me yesterday, you go there, the coverage is just completely different. It's all just like...
Yeah.
upper self actress from LA sticks it to our democratically elected president.
Well, I think if you look at that Meryl Streep thing, I think it's and that's sort of my problem is not with Obama as much as it is the perception of Obama. And like the same with this Meryl Streep thing, when she stuck it, because she sort of had a dig at MMA, right? And football. Mm. It was football and MMA, I think she had a go at. So you imagine that. You're sitting there as a football fan and an MMA fan. And some actor is saying...
100%.
Yeah,
that's
not what you should be enjoying. Like, fuck you, man.
Totally,
do you know what I mean? Like,
sort of the privileged, the elites kind of looking down on...
And also, if you look at it from the point of view that I think that, there's obvious parallels and, you arguably... The Brexit referendum influenced the way that the Trump administration sort of ran their campaign.
Yeah.
But you look at the parallels. If you voted for Trump and then somebody is telling you that you're stupid for doing that or sort of I just think that you're not doing any good. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Can I just imply it with a sort of raise of one eyebrow?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
that better than
and
just
I think you
saying
could,
it?
And I think under your shirt, you could be wearing a T-shirt saying that.
But don't say it overtly.
No.
Right.
That's what I think it
Ron,
is.
Ron, what do you make of like these people like Alex Jones and the InfoWars lot and all that? You know, they're called it because it's like the mainstream media, isn't it? Like, what do you make of all of that?
I've always found it funny that we sort of take the piss out of like North Korea for having their news channels controlled and like being told what they want to tell them under the impression that we are completely free and we are forming our opinions from a completely free and open. I don't think
we are a lot more. We are.
Have you been to North Korea? Have you watched their TV?
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Listen,
Pyongyang's got some banging shows.
I'm sure we are. I don't doubt that. But the idea that we're completely making up our minds for ourselves without any influence is fairly unrealistic, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but I agree with that. That's always going to be the case. But there's this massive sort of move away from mainstream media now as if it's like just completely not to be trusted.
Yeah, there
Alex Jones literally says on his show that Hillary Clinton smells of sulfur and is from hell.
Yeah.
And Trump even went on his show and said, it's great to be here, your reputation precedes you and all this madness. And the guy is he's insane.
Alex Jones is insane. I'm not, but I do think that we are victims of that to a lesser degree. I think like if something happens, like sometimes you read a story and you read the headline to a story and then actually when you read the story you realise that it's not as cut and dried as that. But most people just read the headline and so they'll draw a conclusion from that.
It's like all these people, and so many people are doing this here and in the States, questioning things like the White Helmets and what happened in Syria, saying things like, oh, the White Helmets, who are these incredibly brave guys who go and rescue people from the rubble that have been bombed by the Russian bombardments. And there's all this stuff that's come from like Russia Today and all this Russian propaganda about the White Helmets being like proxies for the CIA and the MI5. It's absolute bullshit. They get money from the British government, they get money from the American government, but they're there saving people day in, day out. They're an incredible organisation. Mm. But this lie has spread everywhere because people have so little trust in mainstream orgs.
I'm sure you're right, but how do you know that?
Mm. Like, because I've been to their offices in Turkey and I know the director that made the film about them in Syria, who's seen them do it, and he's a friend of mine.
Well, I think Rom's making a more general point, don't you? Because this is the problem.
Yeah, I just sort of think that when you make assumptions, there's certain things that you're told that you assume to be correct.
Mm. And
there's
certain things that prove it.
Exactly. Yeah. I think you're more cynical about news coming from certain sources. And I certainly know when I'm reading stuff, I'm more open to a Guardian article than I am to an article in the Daily Mail, right? Mm. And that might be the right approach to take, but... Mm. I've immediately got a bias straight away before I even started reading the content. So, and I've been trained. I've trained myself to be, or I'm hardwired to be like that. You have to be skeptical about everything, yeah. But it's very difficult. Your default position is confirmation bias. Mm. It is to sort of just to consume more of the stuff that agrees with what your viewpoint is. I think it's a really difficult thing to counteract.
So, Ron, do you like? Because obviously, we've talked about this before, but on Twitter and stuff. So, do you like when you're looking at some of these madnesses? Do you go into some of the weird, like the hashtags of the stuff you don't agree with? Do you kind of like look into it like that, or how do you judge?
Yeah,
that?
I do. I try to. I look at. I remember like just after just after Trump's election win, they were talking to, there was, I think it was a guy that was a representative of the Muslim supporters of Trump, right? And they were talking to him about Trump's election.
That's a real
argument. And his, one of the arguments, because I was, you know, despite what I've said about sort of applying more scrutiny to Obama, I am pro-Obama. And he was saying that he thinks Obama's record on race relations is appalling because under Obama's administration, you know, race relations in America is dipped.
Ferguson.
Yeah, all of that, and it hadn't occurred to me, you know, and then it had occurred to me. That's not true, but I sort of thought I hadn't really looked into that viewpoint very much. I was completely prepared to dismiss him straight away, and then I thought, no, I will look into it. And I started looking into, because Obama can't directly be blamed for Ferguson, but what you can look into is what he did and didn't do that have led to that happening. Do you know what I mean? And so sometimes I do it, but I wouldn't say I do it enough. Like, absolutely no way.
So you know when you were like, because I remember the bit in the most recent series where that guy was trying to make you use a gun.
Yeah.
But like when you were in America, like looking back on it now, like what were your, and for people who like are listening to this podcast in Europe and stuff, what were the things that most surprised you, you know, as kids who grew up with American advertising, American films, about what you were seeing, what you were experiencing there, what the attitudes were?
Well, certainly, like, when I was in the South, you know, it's, you know, in the South, the assumption that you're a Trump supporter is a given. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that they all support, you know, they all support Trump, that's it. Do you know what I mean? And they got pissed, you know, when they were showing me the guns, one of them pulled out an AR-15.
Hilarious, by the way.
One of them pulled out an AR-15, and I said, "Isn't that's a semi-automatic? That's like the controversial one." And they were furious with me for like, "Oh, here we go!
Oh, right,
a liberal guy swallowed the story and blah, blah blah." And they just couldn't get on board with why I found guns difficult to deal with. And the other thing I got was I got a bit of racism, like from both black and white people in America,
really?
Who just sort of
black people.
Yeah, well, for example, I don't know if you saw that one of the episodes we hooked up with the Prancing Elites, right?
Yeah.
Who are this
so funny.
Sort of gender fluid dance troupe, right?
Yeah.
And they're all black, and I spent the day with them, and I went and did a dance with them at the end of the day.
Is it naked?
No, it wasn't, but it was in like a leotard.
Rom did ask them all to get naked.
Yeah. They had this thing where they wanted me to tuck, like, you know, like,
yeah,
but so yeah. So, you know, obviously, we've all done the thing where you do the mangina thing.
Yeah.
We've all done that.
Yeah.
But what they do is they
no,
push,
actually, but I just wanted to
join in. They push their testicles up into their stomach and then pull their dick, like, under it round. So you've got no bump at all, basically.
Oh.
Yeah. They want...
And then they just but
Tayo, our producer, is literally
yeah. They
like
wanted
crying.
Me to do that. They wanted me to do that. But anyway, the reason
let's
I mentioned
let's get back onto this. Let's get back to the higher brow point.
Yeah, the reason I mentioned
like
it is
you're
because
putting your dick around your bum with your balls out. There.
Is that I spent a day, like I spent part of the day in a salon, getting a makeover so I could look more like them.
Yeah,
and they were
and a lovely green leotard.
Yeah, in the green leotard, and they put like a do-rag on me, right?
Yeah,
they put a do-rag on me, and he said, "You look like a terrorist," right?
Fuck
and
off.
He said, one of the prancing elites said, "You look like
Jesus.
A terrorist." Right?
Yeah.
And I said, "I'll do it." I sort of laughed, like sort of thinking, but the way he said it, nobody reacted. It was like that was just a fit, like you know, it wasn't a fit. And then I said, "Well, it is sort of part of my just for a joke." I said, "That is kind of part of my belief system." I do sort of, and then he just goes, "I swear to God, if you say anything like that again, like, this is over. I'm walking out." Like
no.
Properly, like
it's
was
really
like,
interesting. There's an assumption, isn't it, that you know, if you're minority that's been put upon in any way over, you know, recent decades or whatever, then you're kind of exempt from racism or sexism or anything like that. But
then similarly, you know, in the interest of balance, we went and did noodling, which is where it's like a way of fishing for catfish where you put your arm down the catfish hole. They bite onto your arm and then you pull out this catfish, right?
So you were pulling out.
I mean,
you were fisting the hole.
Yeah, exactly.
But then
I mean, I refuse to do it. But
what's the purpose of that?
Just you get bigger and better catfish than if you were just doing like
or just fisting, which is popular in some clubs in Amsterdam.
But that family were like proper deep south sort of, you know.
Yeah.
And I thought like we're going to get some shit here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they could not have been like, you know, proper hospitable. You know, you're a what? A vegan? And then he's straight on the phone to his missus, going, "We got to get some vegan shit for this." Like amazing, like proper like southern, you know, that southern hospitality thing. Like it was, and there was nothing even approaching feeling like it was, you know, that was it was a bit weird or anything.
I think we've got to be careful with America as well. Like some a wise man once said to me, you know, America's the land of extremes. You know, you'll get the most conservative, lunatic, you know, Christian or fundamentalist or something like that. But you also get, you know, like California, you know, the most open, liberal, sort of, you know, new thinking, new technologies. You know, the Elon Musks of this world, you know, come from there, and they sort of our salvation. Did either of you hear that program? I know you might have done because we were talking about it the other day on Radio 4, and they were talking about how a lot of this stuff with our preconceived notions, when we were talking about like the echo chamber stuff, what you'd think is if you sat someone down, you're like, look, here's a piece of news from a really good source which confirms that this isn't actually true. If you have a built-in assumption that, like, so if you talk to a Republican about George W. Bush, say, you know, not having WMD, you'd think they'd see the evidence. They'd be like, oh, right, well, yeah, it doesn't have WMD. But they're now calling it this term of kind of, it's essentially like doubling down. Mm. Like, it doesn't do
basically
that.
You just use any evidence to reaffirm the opinion that you already had.
Which is terrifying, because, I mean, what happens then? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I think some of Tupac's albums are lyrically amazing. But if someone shows me evidence that they're not, you'd think maybe I'd look at that. But then I'm just like, actually, they are.
I mean, I can't. There's no accounting for those kind of opinions. But
you disgust me.
You can't knock California Love, mate.
I mean, yes, you can't knock it as a song, but I wouldn't argue that it's the most lyrical piece of fire that I've ever heard. I mean, it's
pure fire.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think you need to be more sort of distrustful of news sources or whatever.
Which takes us nicely into our dessert. Ron, what did you bring for dessert?
For dessert, I've brought. Are we no longer allowed to insult Kanye or his music because it's been confirmed that he is genuinely mentally ill?
Oh my days! This feels like a nice light mental health topic of discussion.
Yeah, but they're all mentally ill.
Are you a fan of Kanye? Because I know Ron is bloody mad about him. But...
yeah, no, I kind of like Kanye. I mean, most great artists are mentally ill. Van Gogh was mentally ill, wasn't he?
Yeah,
well, he cut off his ear, mate.
Yeah, who else is mentally? They're all kind of a bit.
I don't buy all this. They're all mentally ill stuff. I'm sorry, like Kanye's a particularly unusual character. So what's your take on this? Do you think? Because I think what we're referring to, not like most people haven't heard this story, but Kanye West, hip hop artist, husband of Kim Kardashian, friend of Donald Trump, mm-hmm. checked himself in, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
To a
he was doing
hospital.
He was doing a performance, and then 20 minutes in.
Just walked
and said, you know, show's over, and then sort of,
which isn't unusual for Kanye.
No. And immediately after that was sort of checked in, and it turns out he's sort of having some. I think one of the things was extreme sleep deprivation.
Sleep deprivation
it?
And dehydration.
But he wasn't actually sectioned. He checked himself in, right? That's different.
I think as a result of an intervention by people around
really?
Him. Yeah, I don't think he sort of went.
He was saying to a police officer.
Yeah,
I think that he wanted to be. Take it in some way.
Yeah. What I find difficult about this, right, is, and I'll be honest with you, because I'm, you know, I've done a little bit of sort of, I've once upon a time worked with a mental health charity. I'm aware that there are serious issues around it. So I'm not trying to, in any way, you know, sort of not pay respect to those. However, very few people, straight after coming out of a mental hospital, go and walk into Trump Tower.
No comment about your meeting with the president-elect. This is the president-elect of the United States.
I don't want to say anything.
I just want to take a picture right now.
And do you know what? Do you remember when Kanye stood live on the news and said that George Bush didn't care about black people because he hadn't sorted out the black areas in Hurricane Katrina?
After New Orleans.
And how far he's come now. He's now standing next to Donald Trump outside the Golden
What
lift.
Do you reckon, Ramesh?
Well, I think the Trump thing, you know, I think it's born of him being a bit of a contrarian, I think, you know, and I think that's, you know, what he really believes is difficult to sort of ascertain, I think. I think that Kanye has got a little bit of, you know, put his mental health issues aside, I think he's given a bit of an unfair rap. I mean, I think like...
What?
Well, I think he's arrogant. I do think he's arrogant, but... The truth of it is to succeed to the level that he has done,
which is phenomenal.
In an entertainment field, you do have to be arrogant. You do have to believe that you're the best. Otherwise, you're not going to get anywhere, right?
Yeah.
And that is true of almost anyone in that field, right? You know, and I do think that Kanye, I don't want to turn it into a race thing, but I think there are things that he has done that I would argue that if a white artist had displayed those characteristics, it would be put down as sort of rock and roll eccentricities,
yeah,
right?
I can buy that.
And with Kanye, it's sort of, he's a twat.
What examples?
Well, it's just like, you know, I've been guilty of it. Do you know what I mean? So for example, when he brought out his first album, right, he was saying that he didn't feel that the album was getting as much recognition as it should be, and he was sort of like saying this album's incredible and it's not getting the play it should be, and people aren't sort of acknowledging it and blah blah, and the way that was reported was like arrogant bellend Kanye West sort of. And then I read an interview with him afterwards, like sort of down the line, and he had said, the reason that I was going on about it is because I'm so proud of this record, and he says, I don't know if I'll ever do a record as good as that again in my life.
Yeah.
And the idea that record won't get the recognition it's supposed to, and then I might never do anything like that again, it frightens me. And so and that wasn't given anywhere near as much kind of... And I think if that had been someone else saying this album's the greatest, like, you know, that's celebrated. It's like, oh, they said something amazing, isn't that... That's amazing. They think they're bigger than Jesus or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's celebrated.
Yeah.
With Kanye, it's sort of held up for ridicule. I do think he thinks his life is art. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything he does... is a performance. Do you know what I mean? Like, in marrying Kim Kardashian is part of the story that is Kanye West. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, like, him wanting to be a fashion designer. Like, all of these things is part of this... You know, I don't know if you saw the story about, you know, Rick Rubin, when he worked with him on Yeezus.
Yeah.
Like, Kanye turned up to his house and said, I've got this album I've got to put out soon. And then played to Rick, what sounded to Rick Rubin, like, a sound of, like, a series of guttural noises. And he said, I've got to put it out, like, pretty soon. And Rick Rubin's like, fucking hell, mate, we're going to have to work on this, like, 24 hours a day, every day. Like, all of that is, I think, is like, sort of... contributes to his kind of...
But I just think, at the same time, like, are you not kind of like letting him off a bit because of that? Like, okay, so let's say it was, like you said, a white artist and stuff. And I think, look, man, like, the college... we got a good friend in Hayden called Joe Dempsey.
Yeah.
And he's obsessed with Kanye, and he was telling me a lot of stories, which I didn't know. Like, you know, around the time of his mental breakdown, you know, it was the anniversary of his mother's death.
Yeah.
And, like, stuff like that. And obviously, like, that would weigh heavily on anyone. But also stuff I didn't know, like, with College Dropout, isn't it the case that he actually recorded that whole album after just breaking his jaw?
Yeah, but that's through the wire.
Yeah. Which is pretty amazing. But then there's that old, like, the classic Dave Chappelle stories about, like, you know, it's like Kanye. What was the story? I mean, you know this story better than me.
Isn't
like,
the story is, I mean, I'm probably fumbling this.
When he was in the green room.
Yeah, but he's in the green room with Chappelle or whatever, and then...
And no one knew who he was at this point.
Yeah, and somebody phoned him up and he said, I'm here with Chappelle and that, and then they must have said, how come? And he goes, because my life is dope. And that was like,
my life, because I'm Kanye. My life is dope, and I do dope shit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, who else would say that?
Yeah,
but my problem with him isn't his arrogance. My problem with him is that he's just a bore.
You find him boring. I think he's anything but boring.
It's just like, I mean, it's kind of fascinating in a way as well. It's like watching a sort of mental breakdown live on TV. But you wouldn't want to be stuck next to him at a party in a corner, would you? It's just like some guy who's changed off his face who can't really control his hyperbole.
I sort of think... I mean, the particularly good example of what you're talking about is that Ellen interview.
I don't know if you've seen that. That was literally off the charts. Shut up.
Yeah.
And this is my theory about Kanye, and this is why I don't think we should feel sorry for him as someone who's having a mental breakdown, because I think a lot of, you know, celebrated, rich, famous people... essentially have coke addictions. Yes. I think Kanye has got access to some of the world's best cocaine. And I think he goes on these rants, right? And he says all these things like, I'm the greatest, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And then he actually does it. So he never actually has to come down. And I think his recent, you know, episode was basically just hit a wall. And he couldn't.
I don't know. Yeah, I think we're giving drugs too much credit.
I don't know if it's just drugs, but it's a combination of maybe drugs
and fame
and a lack of budgetary restrictions.
And
because there have been times
drugs.
When I thought I could set up a fashion label. Do you know what I mean?
Like, you just didn't have the money to do it. So what you're saying, Rom, is that that's a really dangerous combination. If you have a lot of drugs to talk a lot of shit on,
yeah,
and then you just have the finances to try and make those things reality. it could just be really bad.
It's the same reason why I think it's bad that the internet times at speeds have got quicker, because I think like when you used to look at pornography, the time between you deciding to look at something and then it downloads, then you think halfway through, you think, actually, do you know what? Guilt I should probably do something else. Do you know what I mean? Whereas now, instantly, before you've got anything, you're watching anime of an octopus like fucking a girl. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so that's what I think is the problem. I think like the lack of budgetary restrictions means that
too much
like,
of what as you
too easily. As soon as you think of something, then that happens. I would like a goat butler, and then that happens. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I reckon you're like, giving him such an easy ride here. Like, and I also think you're giving drugs a bad name, because like essentially, like there are a lot of people who, as I think Kevin Smith says when he was doing his Silent J podcast, he was like, you know, some people can handle their high, some people can't. I just think that Kanye's ego knows no bounds. And it, what you're talking about, like, yeah, maybe he sees himself as an artist in his own life, but is that an excuse for some of the behaviour? Like, how, look, you're a massive hip-hop fan, right?
Yeah.
I know for a fact that you have absolutely gone through almost all of Kanye's lyrics, probably read them in the book when there were CDs, because that's the sort of thing you do.
Yeah.
So how do you square what happened with Donald Trump? Like, how, what do, in the life of Kanye, what, how do you see that?
I mean, I've got a theory.
I'm dying to hear it.
I think that he considers him and Kim to be in direct competition with Jay-Z and Beyonce. I think he sees them as trying to take their position, right? And I think as a result of that, and the combination of that with this sort of delusion, he decided to take the opposite position on everything. And Jay-Z came out as like a firm, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce both came out as firm supporters of Hillary.
They did that concert, didn't
they? Kanye was unhappy with the way that, well, he was unhappy with the way that Jay-Z had been a friend to him in the fallout from Kim's robbery, right?
So Ramesh, hold on, is this why you hate Obama and love Trump so much?
Yeah.
Is this where this is coming from?
I just didn't like the blueprint. I think that he was literally doing that as sort of almost like some sort of weird contrarian kind of rebellion. Do you know what I mean?
But Kim's,
you
hate no Trump Beyonce. And you're supporting,
pardon?
Kim's no Beyonce.
No. Well, no, nobody's any Beyonce.
She's like an own brand Beyonce.
Yeah.
She's like a budget Beyonce.
Well, I think
she's
that
a little Beyonce.
I do think that she will have contributed to Kanye's problems, because, you know, because what,
well, she's the one that gets the gack in.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
But, yeah. But I think a man in that situation needs time away from the public eye. And Kim Kardashian's career is based around having more scrutiny placed on her in the minutia of her life, more than probably anybody else that I can think
maybe
of.
Maybe ever.
Like her and Kanye put up these family. Have you heard this controversy about their family photos they've put up?
Oh
have
my
you seen
god!
This?
Yeah.
Right. So ridiculous. There's these family photos that they've put up of them, like, you know, knocking about with the kids, but you know, like just at home.
Yeah.
And they've put like a grainy filter on it, and it looks sort of a little bit sort of
sepia vibes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And people have said that Kanye is trying to give the impression that they're poor, sort of do this sort of poor porn, like poverty porn kind of filter on these photos. But what's interesting about it is in a day, Kim Kardashian's sort of photos got 89 million views or imprints or whatever the hell they call
it. But wasn't it also like because it was the first photo that had come out since the robbery was just titled Family?
Yeah.
But like, I find this stuff like so personally, I sort of think like, look, the woman invented the belfie, right? The bum selfie.
Yeah.
That will probably actually be the thing that people eventually look back on it. What the bloody hell were they thinking with the coming apocalypse? Like,
yeah,
you know. But what I want to say to you, because I want to have you on this one point, right? Yeah. Like, okay, so you're Kanye, you're a Kanye fan. You've watched Kanye your whole career, and he goes in, and you think that he's done this stuff with Trump. So why did he just stand there? Why didn't he want to say anything? Why did he just want to have his picture taken?
Well, I think, you know, if we're going to follow my theory through to its conclusion, he's got no real reason to be with, you know, if you were to ask him, why is it? Because he said, I would have voted for Trump. He said it at his concert, right?
Did he?
And then he said, I would have voted for Trump, I think is what he said. And then after that, he went to visit Trump. But I think if you'd have asked him, if you asked him, why did you support Trump or why did you go and visit Trump? he would have said something insane, like, because he's also a demigod like me. Also, he's one of the only Jupiter ascendancy lights shining in the modern time like me, or what, some bullshit. So, like, you know, they say to him, what did you talk about with Trump? He's probably just thinking, I don't know.
Some Illuminati jam.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm here. I don't know what's going on, but I'll just probably just say I wanted a photo. So,
I really like your theory about having things so, you know, at your immediate disposal.
Yeah.
I think that's like, you know, it's just anything. Like, if you met all these kind of mega billionaires and all these people with these incredible, you know, sort of things at their fingertips, if they meet Kanye and Kim, what's the first thing you're going to say? Hey, man, do you want to come out on my helicopter and see my private island? Obviously, you're going to want to take Kanye out to do that. Or, hey, man, I've got this incredible see-through submarine. Let's go and spend an hour in that and have some caviar brunch together. Like, and you would just never say no to anything because everyone's kind of throwing this amazing stuff at you all the time.
Have you heard Kevin Smith talking about Prince? Have you heard this thing about... So Prince wanted him to make a documentary, right?
What?
Yeah, he wanted him to like go out to his...
What,
like,
properly?
Properly, like just go turn up at his gaff and like film and stuff like that. So anyway, Kevin Smith was talking to him about it. I think Prince had recorded a new album. And he had an album listening party where he invited people to his home, to Paisley Park, and then these people would come, and then then Kevin Smith would capture it. And Kevin Smith, like, sort of had a chat with Prince about it, and then said, and it's like, I can't fucking do this. Is not what I'm, you know, do you know what I mean? I don't do this, right? This is mad, right? You don't know it's cool to be with Prince, but this is fucking bonkers. So he goes to Prince's, like, PA or whatever and says, look, I can't do this. Can you tell Prince I can't do this? And she said, I mean, there's absolutely no way I can do that. And he goes, why?
Just
he goes,
because say no to
because
him.
When Prince asks for stuff,
he gets it.
Like if he wakes up in the middle of the night and he says, I want a camel now, we then have to figure out how we're going to break it to Prince that it's difficult to source a camel at that time.
I want some rose petals with a hint of juju berries, with a small Aryan child flying around on the kites. But the biggest, he can get whatever he wants. It's true, he's Prince.
The biggest problem, though, is that that just used to be the privilege of kings and queens, a couple of rich people.
Yeah. Good point.
Everyone wants it.
Yeah.
You know, we all wake up, we push an app, we want to eat, have our like beef burger taken to us by some delivery driver.
Everybody's striving to get pretty much. Everyone's striving to get as much as they can.
Yeah, we all want to
just
be Prince,
grateful for the fact you have some limitations. That's all.
And on that absolute bombshell of telling all our listeners, just be grateful for what you've got, including this podcast. We've got to say thank you to Ramesh Rom. As you did to me, this is the part where we ask you if you've got anything else you want to tell us about. What's going on with you? You've got a big year coming.
No. I mean, I just finished the tour.
The DVD's out.
Yeah, I mean, who's buying DVDs now? But
worth a little stream.
Stream it illegally, whatever. Yeah, I don't think I'm getting any more royalties from it, so you might as well get it illegally. I don't know, is the honest truth. You know,
any more Asian provocateur in the pipeline?
Possibly. I think like we'll have to see. But like as I said to you, sort of, I don't want to do it just for the sake of doing it.
No, totally.
So. If we come up with something good, then we'll do. And then I'll probably start writing a new show, I guess. Like, normally, I can only last about 2 weeks without sort of turning over new stuff and going back on stage. So
you got a new sitcom I'm hearing though coming out as well.
I'm doing a sitcom. Sitcom pilot.
It's exciting.
I'm quite nervous about it because I sort of think like everything I've done so far has just been me in a different situation. You know, stand up is you. Doing Asian provocateur is you. Do you know what I mean? I'm not acting or anything. And admittedly, I mean, the character is going to be grumpy and different Asian man. So it's not exactly testing my range. Do you know what I mean? But
to pretend to be someone else.
It still feels like
it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's scary. Yeah,
mate. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
Thanks
so
very much, man.
So much.
No, you gonna wash up?
Is that what? Yeah, I will do.
Thanks.
No worries. Sorry.